Venice Diary.
Hello and good evening. Welcome to Global Critics Venice Voice from the Venice Film Festival on Fred Film Radio. I'm Rita Di Santo. I'm the host, and I'm here with my brilliant fellow critics from Quebec.
Ben Kroll, I write for many outlets in the U.S. press, and as well contribute to France 24.
From Turkey, I write for Posta newspapers and also Milliyet newspapers.
And I'm very honored to have, for the first time, a celebrity from the UK.
That's not true. Yeah, I'm Nicholas Barber, or you can call me Nick. I'm here from the BBC in London. So, bbc.com is where my reviews will be running this festival.
I'm very nervous because I don't have a Londoner accent. I try always to imitate Nicholas. Okay, this is day five. And I want to start with the movie, the first movie in the competition we have seen from the press conference, from the press screening. Yeah, from the press screening. This is day five, by the way. Okay, The Testament of Anne Lee by Mona Fassbold with Amanda Seyfried. The writer is Brady Colbert, is the husband of Mona Fassbold. I'm sure you know him because he's the director of The Brutalist, and Mona is his wife, and they wrote together also The Brutalist. And then we have also Daniel Bloomberg, that he wrote the music for The Brutalist, and is again here. This is very important, the music, because this The Testament of Anne Lee is a religious musical. How amazing! I haven't seen a religious musical for a long time. I think I was a kid when I saw once. I don't know.
Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah, exactly.
It's quite different from that.
Yeah. But it's got something for everyone, you know. You don't have to like religion to like musicals. You don't That's have to true. Like musicals to like religion. It's the best of both worlds.
Yeah. So anyway, it's about Anne Lee. It's a woman that lived in the 17th century in New England, and is known as Mother Anne Lee. What is the founder of the leader of religious movement called the Shakers, and it's about her tragic life and her small group of followers that immigrate from England to New York. How fascinating!
And I think it's one of the standouts of the competition thus far. It's like an extremely accomplished film. I suppose that's not a surprise given the pedigree, behind it. But it's also a very surprising one in the way that it's very different than The Brutalist. It's a lot more austere than The Brutalist. It's a lot pricklier than The Brutalist is as well, in an odd way. It's a movie about somebody with, an extraordinary high amount of self-confidence and conviction, religious conviction, but also personal conviction, made by a filmmaker that you could say the same thing about. The movie does not really try to entertain; it only ever wants to impress. And I like that strict thing. Maybe that's my own psychology, but I like that strict religious education. It's like, oh, you know what? Okay, I can absolutely get onto that wavelength.
It's a unique musical for me. It's like Joan of Arc's stories. It's done alternatively in a feminist musical for me. Style of Mona Fassbold's The World to Come was also influential movie. It was mostly queer and about the writing process of a writer and the queer relationship altogether. It was a poetic movie, and she made also another movie, Sleepwalker. It was also interesting. She has a style other than Brady Corbett. She started his style, and The World to Come is another level, of course, but here also she's continuing her style. That's memorable for me. It will be remembered as a cult musical for me.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to quite have the this breakout success that The Brutalist had. And The Brutalist really had everybody talking last year. And then, of course, it went on to be a big awards contender. So you kind of go in thinking, is this going to be this year's Brutalist? For me, it wasn't quite at that level. I really enjoyed it to begin with. It's very strange to begin with. Much of the strangeness is in the opening half hour, when it really mixes music and dance with kind of period drama, biopic conventions, in quite a strange way. You know, you think the characters are singing just because that's what the Shakers are doing, and then you realize, oh no, it's a bit of a choreographed musical number, and it's all quite fascinating on sex and pain and punishment and religion. I was thinking, oh, here we go. This is going to be a blast. For me, it gets a little bit Wikipedia later on. It starts to just kind of go through the things which happened. And it's like, well, this is when they moved to this place. And this is when they started making their famous Shaker furniture. And then this is when they were persecuted. And I feel like I didn't really get to know. I mean, I don't like the strictness maybe as much as you do, Ben, but I wanted to know a little bit more about, hold on a second, why does she think she is this incredibly important religious figure? And why do people buy into it? You know, as charismatic as she is, why do people think that she is the Messiah and they're willing to kind of move to this commune and give up sex and all the rest of it? And what is it about settlers in America that made them kind of strangely vulnerable to whatever religious movement was around at the time? I didn't really get that. So yeah, ultimately I thought, I was maybe my hopes were slightly too high after The Brutalist. That was really going to be blown away, and it didn't quite do that for me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, at the beginning, it's really, really powerful. I have to say, as a female critic, I really liked the beginning. And thinking of the condition of women, I felt this is a very feministic tale, very feministic movie. And at the beginning of the movie, it's very powerful because we have this woman that lose four babies and one dead, but the other two the first year. And it was so, the acting also, I like the color, but I felt that this tragedy, it was like representing all the tragedy of women. How could have been the life of a woman in the 16th century in England or anywhere in the world? So I felt that very, very powerful. I don't know the story. I have to be honest, I didn't know this Mother Ann Lee. Maybe it's popular in the...
No, I hadn't heard of her, I must admit. I did do the Google and the Wikipedia search beforehand, so I had a bit more of an idea, which maybe I shouldn't have done. But no, I hadn't heard of her before.
Yeah, it's amazing. And also, what I like, I'm with you, Nicholas, because the structure of the movie is a bit wobbling, but I like the idea of these people with this strong religious that face this huge trip between from England to New York. And I felt how many other movement, religious movement, started from the UK, from the Europe. So, and also, I felt incredible. The idea, the musical, I mean, we are used to musical, Nicholas. We have at least one musical in the UK distributed, you know. But this is very powerful. I like the choreography. I like the kind of music that a bit tribal. It's like very visceral, very... So there has something in the movie, and also the violence against women. Mm-hmm. How incredible. And she's accused of witchcraft, and she's persecuted, and we have some martyrs as well at the end. So I felt there are so it's a pity that this narrative structure doesn't keep, and we have incredible atmosphere, incredible moment.
Well, I just to build on that, you know, just to go back to everything that all of you were saying, which has gotten me thinking and everything, you know, I mean, perhaps it's somewhat unfair to compare her films to those of Brady Corbett, that would, because, you know, the closeness of their professional and personal relationship, it sort of is inevitable. Mm. Also, you know, The Brutalist was presented as a film by Brady Corbett and Mona Fastwold. This was presented as a film by Mona Fastwold and Brady Corbett. So they are leaning into their professional partnership. McCorbett is a pop filmmaker. You know, I mean, he's very good at wrangling all of his influences, but the influences are all there. They're all on the surface, and we can sort of enjoy watching them and being refiltered through, you know, his very sophisticated camera work. You know, Fastival's background was in dance, and she just sort of moves through these movies, as you mentioned about The World to Come. Mm-hmm. And now this, she just gets down into the dirt, and she just wants to live in the world and trudge up the dirt and really put you into the feeling, the aesthetic experience, the emotional experience, and then the intellectual experience of these worlds that she is recreating. She's not really leaning back towards too much pop imagery, although I'm sure there is plenty that you can, you know, even in the press notes they talk about, you know, looking towards Caravaggio and everything. But again, it's more of the sort of visceral experience of the world rather than the sort of like visual representations of that world, which I think we see with a lot more of Brady Corbett's movies, which also make those movies a little bit more accessible and a little bit more commercial. This is just really the visceral experience of first the pain, the suffering, the mourning, the lack of understanding, and how all of that, all of this sort of toxic mix, which is enough to make anybody go crazy, let alone a young woman mourning the death of four children, how all of that just gets transferred into movement. And that, how that movement becomes infectious. And it becomes the physical movement becomes a religious movement. And I was just completely on board with that. I thought that the kind of emotional and aesthetic logic of the movie completely worked on me.
But Brady Corbett is mostly doing structures based on the maybe dictatorship and historical things are more important for him in Brutalist and Childhood of a Leader. But Fastworld is differs in that. She's mostly a mystery director, maybe mystery movie director. So that becomes more, the films are taught more after that, after watched. And it can be watched again and again, and you can understand more meanings. So that makes it a little different than Brady Corbett, I think.
Yeah, I felt sometimes, as a movie that I love it, sometimes it had a bit of silly lines for the, almost nervous to explain the fact, like when she surrounded by children, also all the characters that are around her, they're not really clear. I don't remember who's his brother, husband, friends. It's not very, they're all a bit like that, but it's one line that I laughed. I have to be honest, sorry. It was quite a tragic movie, but always a line that you can laugh in a tragic movie. And this one, well, she's surrounded by children, and I think her husband comes. I say, wow.
Well, he doesn't come, that's the problem.
Yeah, I said, all these children, because she was against
sex and procreation.
Yes, and procreation. So you see all this, and she explained, oh, they are all from a single mother, but also single father. Okay, that I laughed. So,
yeah, okay. And it's a bit early on where someone says, there's a preacher on a street corner, and someone says, so what do you call your religious movement? He goes, well, some people, we say that we use lots of method. So that's why we're sometimes called the Methodists. And I just thought, you know, you've got this very daring, unconventional film, and in a lot of ways, but then suddenly it kind of slips into this very conventional period drama thing, like the montage of the making furniture. You know, what do we know about the Shakers? They make furniture, so let's have a montage of all their nice chairs and things without really saying why or how they came up with this style. It's just like, you know, ticking off things you might want to know about the Shakers. So for me, it was a puzzling mix of really daring, of this unusual kind of hybrid of just a very, as you say, very immersive and very kind of believable, naturalistic kind of period drama. And then with kind of avant-garde dance. But then also the much more conventional side, which is, as I say, the kind of one thing after another biopic, which, yeah, slightly wore me out towards the end.
Okay, it's not a perfect movie. It's not The Brutalist, but go and see it. Let's go to let's talk about the second movie competition for today. We have The Smashing Machine by Benny Safier, the story of a champion wrestler, Marker's life and career, exploring theme of identity and vulnerability. A biosport drama, Smashing Machine was his nickname. I haven't seen it, so I'm really ready to, and I know that Ben...
I also haven't seen it, but I feel very strongly about it. So.
Well, it is, it's, as you say, it's directed, written and directed by Benny Safdie, who's one of the Safdie brothers. They made Good Time with Robert Pattinson, and they made famously Uncut Gems with Adam Sandler. They're now a bit like the Coen brothers, they're off doing their own separate films. It's never, it doesn't seem to be a good sign, both with the Coens or the Safdies. Anyway, this is Benny Safdie's film. It stars Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and this has kind of been seen as his bid for Oscar glory. It's his, you know, after decades of really big, fun popcorn blockbusters, which have made billions of dollars, he's going for a serious, dramatic role. It's not a huge stretch, because he is a very muscly wrestler, and he's playing a very muscly wrestler in the film. But it is a drama, it is an art house drama. It is about this real guy, Mark Kerr, who was one of the first kind of mixed martial arts fighters when it was still not really a big thing in the US, which is part of the story, that he's, you know, he has to travel to Japan to make some money because America, you know, now it's a massive worldwide thing, this mixed martial arts, but it wasn't then. This is it's the period between 1997 and 2000. So it's kind of the opposite, where Ann Lee tries to kind of basically cover her whole life. This is taking a little chunk. And it's about, his troubles with addiction, his troubles of balancing his relationship with his girlfriend, who's played by Emily Blunt, with having to go around and punch people's faces and kick their heads.
I heard that it's more about the wrestling, and then there is a bit of drama, but the problem of the movie is that it's too much fighting.
No, actually, it's more psychology.
Yeah,
it's,
I could have done with some more fighting.
Yes, it's like between Emily Blunt and Dwayne Johnson, it's like the alter ego relationship is the most part of the movie. And till the end, it is going to that way. Actually, it's... We shouldn't do tell about surprises, but and it's mostly about alter egos and it's more plastic. I mean, Benny Safdie maybe can be the plastic part of the Safdie brothers. That's why I like the visual structure. And till the beginning, it's like there is a found footage or something at the background, and we can see that. It is the it is going the time it's 2000, I think. It is going to this retro timeline is structured very creatively for me, and you can follow this with thrilling editing and nice cinematography, and also the rock is like. going to more like four different types, and it's like it's he has the idea of going to Oscars, but we will see. As okay. Makeup and everything.
Yeah,
Drac, I can't say that Drac is an actor before this, but now I can say that he can be an actor, and Emily Blunt is also. It plays very nice. I hope she will be nominated at Oscars.
So
she deserves.
I'm curious about something that you said. If you could like expand on that a little bit, just so you talk about, you know, looking at it through the lens of the previous films directed by the two of them, by the Safdie brothers. What I haven't seen it. So like what resonates in the Smashing Machine that sort of feels. Connected to their earlier work, and you know, if you want to play Safdieology, like it's
I mean, more realistic Safdie brothers movies is like when you see more realistic types of approaches, and here more likely this is a plastic. Found footage and everything, using that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I have to cut because we are very, very close to the end, and I had my day at the end. This is the time of Aperol Spritz or Campari Spritz, Nicholas has chosen Campari Spritz. And so we are relaxing, and we have this game. We have thumbs up or thumbs down from all the movies that we watch. So for The Testament of Ann Lee, thumbs up or thumbs down?
Two thumbs up. Chairs up. Chairs
four
up.
Four thumbs wobbling or thumbs up. Oh, come on.
Yeah, no, I'll say thumbs up.
Up, up, up. Yeah. Oh, wow. Four thumbs up. Woo! And for the smashing machine, myself and Ben cannot vote. What about you?
Thumbs up.
Yeah, I'll give it a thumbs up. I mean, I was... don't think it matched. I know I've been playing this game of comparing one film to the Brutalist, and now I'm comparing this to the Safdie Brothers films. I don't think it's as good as the Safdie Brothers' previous films.
Wow, two thumbs up. Very, very good, very positive. Today, we have a movie left from the previous days. So one is the La Grazia. Thumbs up or thumbs down?
Thumbs up.
That's a thumbs up, yeah.
Wow, it keep the pole position, La Grazia. And then we had also No Other Choice, that is in pole position, thumbs up or thumbs down?
That's pretty easy, thumbs up on that one.
Which one?
No other choice.
I know
the Park Chan-wook film.
Yeah, Park Chan-wook, down.
You were here, yeah. It's again, three thumbs up for No Other Choice.
That's my biggest thumbs up at the festival.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. It was great to have you here.
Just because I didn't see the Smashing Machine, I got to give a thumbs up to a bar called Lido Divino. It's just a little bit further down. It's past the Excelsior. I had the best sandwich of my entire life there. I give that 10,000 thumbs up. It's right on the beach. Go there. Keep them in business for 100 years.
Okay.
Lido Divino. It is actually divine.
Okay. Thank you very much to be on Global Critics Vanity's Voice. And see you tomorrow. Bye. Fred. 24/7 on Fred FM and smartphone app.